Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics. And due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the heart of liberal Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Best friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Now here are your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a glorious Thursday edition, Dom, with some indictments coming down against the Trump org and the CFO thereof, the Supreme Court dropping a couple of anti-democratic, anti-voting rights rulings, and we got the perfect guest for the moment. He's former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He's a friend of ours. Jim, thank you so much for coming around today.
I'm glad to be with you once again. Another important day in the history of America.
Thank you, Jim.
It certainly is. Let's start with the Supreme Court rulings, if we could, Jim. Let's start with the Arizona case, the voting rights case in Arizona. The lower courts had ruled that case discriminatory. Effectively, they said that should be taken up under, what, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And then it got to the Supreme Court in the 6-3 conservative supermajority, and they effectively flipped the appeals court, did they not, Jim?
They did, absolutely. And speaking about things that are important in our history, while we're going to talk later on, I'm sure, about some indictments coming out of New York City, I would argue to you that this decision today is long-term more important to the future of our democracy, candidly, and what we're going to anticipate from the Supreme Court down the road. Go back to 2013, Shelby County versus Eric Holder, my former boss. This was the case that put this all in motion. This was the case in which John Roberts basically said, you know what, we're sort of living in a post-racial America. We no longer have to apply those old standards, found Section 4, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, a combination of those unconstitutional, and said, you know what, the United States Department of Justice can no longer has the authority to do this pre-approval process for many districts across the country, not just in the South, all across the country that have had a history of discrimination in voting. And that was taken away at that time. That's the event that prompted all of these states within hours, candidly, after that opinion was issued, to begin this road of articulating plans and then passing legislation to limit voting rights. It results in what we've seen the past couple of years. And then ultimately today now, we're getting back to Section 2, as you indicated, which is the remaining enforcement part of the statute. It does remain, as the Attorney General said earlier and this week, but it plainly has taken a big hit today by virtue of what the Supreme Court has said, saying that these two Arizona provisions in the law, having to do with how you count votes, how you get votes into the ballot boxes, that those can be sustained, and that they do reject in the end this notion that was found, as you indicated, by the lower courts, that this had an inappropriate impact upon voters of color. Very, very significant and not good in terms of what we can anticipate down the road when other legislative enactments also get before the federal courts.
So, Jim, not only did they overturn the lower court rulings, they also ignored the statistical breakdown of who is affected by these Arizona laws. And it was like twice as likely it was a minority voter affected. And Alito basically ignored that fact, Kagan scathing in her dissent. Jim, speak to that if you've got a minute.
Absolutely. And again, I would recommend, we haven't advised your listeners to read something, but read the entire opinion, including especially Elena Kagan, who is very serious about this in not just, it's not just an attack. It's not just a what many people regard as a political attack on the other side. This is a very thoughtful analysis. As you said, we talk a lot about the intent of legislation. We talk about the impact of legislation. And as you indicated, clearly a huge impact on people of color in Arizona by virtue of this legislative fiat, if you will. The fact that Alito basically says, well, we're going to dismiss that, not significant, those laws can stand, is a rejection of that fundamental notion that the laws should ensure that people of all colors and of all abilities and disabilities and all the other immutable characteristics that are part of our nation, that everyone has the right to vote. They're qualified to do that. That's a real attack on democracy, if you will. And again, the Kagan dissent I would offer to you is perhaps where you even start with the reading of this opinion, because she really lays out effectively exactly what's wrong. And again, why this is so critically important for America today, as I indicated, when future statutes, and they're happening all around the country, also get to the federal court, say, we're going to look at this, we're going to hear this again. The Supreme Court today on July 1, that case is going to be used as precedent to support other pieces of legislation that are also making their ways under Section 2, not 4 and 5, but under Section 2 into the courts. Underscores once again, what does the United States Congress need to do? And this is the political piece of it, but it's the legislative piece of it. Do the remedy of Shelby versus Shelby County. Do the Shelby fix. Make that happen.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel joining us via the Zoom. Jim, great to have you once again. Appreciate your time as always. Also coming out of the Supreme Court, on Thursday, today, invalidated a California rule that requires charitable organizations to disclose the names of contributors in a case that could impact the future of dark money politics. Jim, apparently the Supreme Court, again, along a 6-3 conservative liberal line, went down this path. What's your take on this ruling, Jim?
Again, perhaps only slightly less significant than the other case under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. This has to do with that word we use a lot, but it's important to use, transparency, right? We want to know how it is that our government is being affected, how people are having an impact upon our elected officials. This was an attempt by California, frankly, in a fairly narrow area, to identify where the money is coming from. This goes back to Citizens United and all that tradition that followed from that. That is money and how we follow it inside the political process. Basically, the Supreme Court says, nope, you don't have to disclose that. And once again, we are putting a cloak, rather than establishing a transparency, we're putting a cloak on that kind of thing. Americans should know more about what's going on in their elected politics.
Jim, the concept of the traditional charitable contribution, right? Think of the NAACP. And this is different from when those rulings came out back then versus the kind of the world we live in now, where you can set up a 501c3 and essentially do electioneering, and skirt a lot of the rules that were originally there. But I can appreciate. I mean, in the case of NAACP, you don't want necessarily retribution to those who would support civil rights and those kinds of things. Is that same concern for the Koch brothers funding Americans for Prosperity? Is that equal because they're 501c3s?
Yeah, again, this is the kind of thing that lawyers spend an awful lot of time and judges spend an awful lot of time parsing out. And I would offer that there can and should be a difference between those things, especially when you get to the issue of elective politics. When you are paying for an impact on voting, you're paying for who is going to end up representing you. That's different from making contributions to things like the environment generally, to racial equality, to law enforcement reform, more broad issues that go to how we conduct our business and our affairs as a nation. The elective piece is more particular. And I think that's why there are an awful lot of people, me included today, find that opinion to be problematic, and do distinguish it from other ways in which you can make donations to companies, to entities, nonprofit organizations, without having disclosures.
Jim, even if we passed an SB1, even if we could find a means of doing so, there was a McCain-Feingold bill once upon a time that became law, and then it was taken apart brick by brick. Don't you suspect that would be the same, knowing the sentiment of this 6-3 conservative supermajority?
That is the concern, of course. And we talk a lot about precedent. If you pull apart both the decisions that were issued today, you will find an awful lot of language, again, that went to hear repeatedly, not just in the weeks, but in months, but also years ahead. The Supreme Court should be, to my mind, a reflection, not necessarily of every contemporary whim, but the way in which we view our fundamental processes, and that's legislative processes, elected processes, the way that business works, the way that healthcare works, education, all those kinds of things. And yes, the Supreme Court does have an awful lot of jurisdiction, if you will, to take a look at things, determine whether or not legislative enactments, as we saw today, are proper or not. That should also be impacted, I would offer, by an analysis that goes to, again, going back to the Arizona situation. What is the impact upon Americans today? How does that impact on us on 2021? That's what I think is missing. It is, as your question indicates, it raises the specter. We're going to see more of this down the road. And today, unfortunately, unlike some recent Supreme Court cases, 9-0, we've got these 6-3 fairly partisan splits in our United States Supreme Court.
Jim, is this the most partisan ruling we've seen from this court since Coney Barrett joined it?
I think that it probably is. As I said at the outset, this matter coming out of Arizona, right down party lines, and the statements made by both majority and obviously the dissenters make that line very, very clear. And I think you can put this in that category, perhaps at the top of that category, probably most partisan decision that we have seen. Again, we've seen other things in law enforcement where we've got unanimity. We've got many other issues where we're sort of surprised by how the Supreme Court has issued its opinions. That's not today. And this one, as I say, I think it's at the top of the list.
Jim, perhaps not in this show, but on another show, we'll talk more about the plan to perhaps expand the U.S. Supreme Court. Because if the supermajority of conservatives on the court, the 6-3 majority, if they don't believe in upholding democracy and the Voting Rights Act, Jim, then we got a big problem. It's hard to solve that problem through legislation that they can just turn around and strike down. Come back with us, a fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He's still a friend of ours, we hope. At least if you stick around for one more segment at minimum, Jim. More Devil's Advocates. More James Santel, more legal rulings. And of course, the main course, the indictment down at the Trump org. A lot of felonies, Jim. Sort of a heavy indictment. Harsh, you might say. And a perp walk to boot. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates.
Judicial system.
The Devil's Advocates, political commentary from the back of the class. Time was
drifting. And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you missed any of this fine program, and why would you? You can always go to devilradio927.com. You can listen to and download podcasts and interviews.
And Dominic, we have the finest of guests, the legal eagle sorts. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Jim, thanks for sticking around. May keep you one more segment, but before we get greedy, let's get to the main course. The prosecutors effectively, at least in my opinion, Jim, kind of threw the kitchen sink at Weisselberg and the Trump org. Did you get that impression as well?
Absolutely. And I know there's some commentary already out there talking about, well, this isn't significant, and playing the last couple of days, defense counsel have said, you know, nothing here to nothing big to look at here. I have just the opposite view, and it's your view as well. This is, as the prosecution said, this is sweeping and audacious, right? Two adjectives, tax avoidance scheme. I have three big takeaways. One of them is that this is the Trump organization writ large. This is not a subset, not a subsidiary. This is Trump. This is the brand of our now former president. This is going after the company. And that's no small thing. That's a very important part of this. Second, as you also just indicated, we've got 15 counts, but more important, 15 years of this kind of activity. Not 15 months, not 15 weeks, 15 years of a tax avoidance scheme, tax fraud, false statements, false business practices, false records, and goes on and on, basically charging the same kinds of things different ways, but again, very, very broadly, chronologically, alleging all of this misconduct inside the Trump Organization. And the third thing, which I think is especially interesting, is this is not the end. There's already a lot of focus on an unindicted co-conspirator and other executives who's out there. And there's been some recent commentary that that may not in fact be Donald Trump. But plainly, there are other people involved in this, which has great consequences for what happens next. So again, sweeping, important, and not to be dismissed as defense counsel has done already, both as to Alan Weisselberg, lots of exposure here, and the corporation as well. This is how corporations die, candidly, with this kind of not only bad press, but criminal prosecution and perhaps conviction as well.
Well, Jim, you've got Weisselberg's former daughter-in-law cooperating with the investigators, my understanding, and at least some of the articles, the reporting I've read, one of the unindicted co-conspirators at this point is probably Weisselberg's son, be it Barry or the other one, that were running the cash-only ice rink and also getting the benefit of either a hugely subsidized apartment on Central Park South or the free apartment over on 61st Street in Manhattan. Either way, that is truly a financial benefit. Do you think that this is to basically say, Weisselberg, you can either flip on the boss or hell, we're going to turn around and charge not just you, but probably also your family. And the wife had what? The Mercedes-Benz lease. She's wrapped up in this as well, Jim.
Absolutely. And the answer is, again, yes and yes. Plainly, we've talked for a long period of time about the fact that the DA, Cy Vance, has been focused on Weisselberg as sort of this conduit to explain all the documents, the transactions, be like the Michael Cohen inside the Trump Organization. He has resisted that. This is, as some people have said, calling his bluff. This is the direct litigation prosecution shot at Weisselberg to say, we're serious about this. And you can come forth now and begin to cooperate with us. You can work with us, or you can go down this road. So as to him, absolutely, family members, other people inside the Trump Organization, all of them should be looking at this today and seeing some future exposure, wondering whether they want to be on the side of the prosecution or perhaps on the side of conviction and potentially imprisonment, depending upon how this plays out. So I think it's plainly a very wise and thoughtful strategic move by Cyrus Vance. It is not the end, not only because he's said just that, as has the Attorney General of the State of New York. But remember, too, that Cy Vance has filed a number of pleadings talking about bank fraud, insurance fraud, misvaluing properties. That's not inside this indictment. So there's more that they're looking at. And again, just like it was during the course of our discussions about Mueller investigation, when we had the Manafort and Gates indictments, and then Papadopoulos and Van der Swan, and then the Russians, we had all these series of indictments. I think this is the first of others to come. This is the beginning of the beginning. This is not the end by any means.
So we've got the indictment of the CFO and perhaps the unindicted co-conspirator that is the CFO's son, Weisselberg's son, but Trump not mentioned, not by name in these indictments, Jim. But Trump apparently reportedly, according to ABC News, was watching the courtroom scene. And my understanding is these indictments dropped last night. Weisselberg turned himself over this morning, and there weren't masses of media, only one New York Times photographer. So you think, well, maybe the prosecutor's taking it easy, you know, maybe still hoping to garner cooperation out of Weisselberg. But then they kind of perp walked his ass in the court, Jim. They had him wearing handcuffs. What was your interpretation? Was that for the benefit not just of Weisselberg, but perhaps Trump?
You know, we'd like to think, and I do think, that prosecutors have good intent in doing what they do, bringing charges when they should bring charges, and not specifically playing to those lower, baser sentiments and sort of inclinations of all of us, but, including a former president. But in this circumstance, again, he surrenders himself. Was that appropriate to have him brought into the courtroom in custody? Absolutely, even for a white-collar criminal. He is released now on a PR bond. That image is also intent to do something that prosecution should do, which is deter conduct. If you engage in this sort of thing, this is the kind of thing that you will see. This is what will happen to you. Maybe it's to an audience of one in Florida, other, or maybe in New Jersey now, but it certainly is to America as well.
Jim, he may have been released on his recognizance talking about Weisselberg, but he did lose his passport. No weekend trips to Cancun with the Cruz family. Jim, I hope you got more time for us because I got more questions for you, sir. Come back. The Devils Advocates Radio Show, a Thursday afternoon edition. Former U.S. Attorney James Santel, our fine guest. We'll be right back.
Was that wrong? Should I not have done that? I tell you, I gotta plead ignorance on this thing because if anyone had said anything to me at all when I first started here, that sort of thing was frowned upon.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
As soon as my routine audit's finished, I'll release my returns. I'll be very proud.
This is a thing I've never known before. It's called easy living.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got a fine guest. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, thank you for the generosity of your time and your spirit. Having a good time talking about the indictments of the Trump Organization and the CFO thereof.
Jim, I want to get, maybe drill down a little bit on both of these. 15 felony counts to Weisselberg. Reporting we've read says up to 105 years imprisonment if convicted on all counts. Now, that seems like a lot of pressure to me, Jim. But, presumably no one gets convicted on everything all the time, right? What's your experience when you see something like this? If we assume that Weisselberg does not cooperate, right? How do you think this, if he's found guilty, would he? I know it's a lot of guessing here, Jim, but what are the odds of him serving 105 years?
Highly unlikely. You're absolutely right. And again, we do those kinds of things, and the media in particular does them because it sounds very dramatic to say that. But just like we saw in the Derek Chauvin matter, when you add up all the counts for which he was convicted, you get a very high number. Plainly, that's not what the appropriate sentence should be. Class C felonies in New York, frankly, anywhere from probation to 15 years. All these kinds of things have an impact upon what could happen here. Let's assume that he is either convicted after a jury trial or should plead guilty, which is probably unlikely unless he is cooperating. But again, all kinds of things factor into this. He is the chief financial officer for an organization, this entity that has 3,500 employees. He plainly has been there for a very long period of time, for 48 years or so. He knows what's going on. This is not a low-level functionary. And so you can impute to him an awful lot of intent and knowledge about what's happening. Notice also that the indictments here talk about these ledgers that Cy Vance has, ledgers where they actually kept track of sort of this payoff, if you will, between actual payments of salary and the benefits for all sorts of things like rent and cars and those kinds of things. This was a scheme of very elaborate dimension. And it's impossible to believe, if anything in the indictment is close to being true, that Weisselberg did not know about that. That has an impact, too, upon the kind of sentence he may serve down the road. On the other hand, he's 73 years old. He's not a young man anymore. But in the end, again, we've seen others who have engaged in fraud of this kind. He plainly, as we know, the allegation is that he was receiving more than $1.7 million in off-the-book compensation. That's a lot of money for, I think, virtually almost all Americans.
And so,
again, if you stand in front of a judge, you may, in fact, find yourself in prison, even for a small period of time. Your reputation is destroyed. Your communication, your lifeblood right now with this entity is also terminated. He faces some serious results as in the wake of any kind of conviction here. Absolutely.
Well, and it wasn't just the lack of paying taxes on, actual compensation received. It was, applying and receiving basically tax credits. Is that the grand larceny charge, Jim? And what kind of sentence would that hold? Do you view that one differently than just these other fraud cases or tax evasion
cases? Yeah, that's the core of it. And again, in the federal system, we've got a bank fraud charge. in New York, they do not have something formally named that. So they do in fact have this grand larceny, the second degree, which is basically the same kind of thing. Lawyers' words for different kinds of same kind of conduct. And again, that's the big one for him. Again, bringing into the court the intent that he had. Grand larceny. Those words have meaning. You're stealing money of large amounts. And again, depending upon how guidelines may play out, again, he will not go to jail for 20 years for doing this. But he does have some significant exposure here. And again, as I said, beyond that, his family, as we've talked before, a family may be brought along with this. This is not the last of the indictments coming forth. I would offer to you more broadly, too, that this corporation that which he's been affiliated for most of his career, this is the beginning of the end of that.
And so that's my next point then, Jim. So the corporation itself apparently has 10 felony counts against that. And you brought this up, and I guess I want to go there next. So what specifically, where do you see the greatest exposure for the Trump Organization, I guess, given, you know, their book of business, let's call it? I look at them as being perhaps highly leveraged in, you know, in real estate. What would a conviction of fraud of one or up to 10 counts for the organization, what would be the biggest exposure points for them?
Sure. You've got both legal exposure and then you've got that extrajudicial exposure, right? The legal side, of course, is corporate. You can't throw a corporation in jail, right? You can't do that. But can you fine a corporation sometimes within inches of its life? We recall very well that, remember, BP in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon drilling disaster, 11 people killed, pled guilty to manslaughter and suffered a huge amount of criminal fines for that. Other things, Arthur Andersen, our nation's history. So you can impose a significant financial impact upon a corporation, other prohibitions on its ability to do its work that can basically bring it to its knees. And that, again, it can be a part of the sentence here. That is much related to the extrajudicial piece of this too. If you are a convicted corporation, banks, insurance companies, other entities out there, they're not going to be inclined necessarily to engage with you much further and grant you loans and do those other things, kinds of things that business people do. That gets shut off. That's the other lifeblood of the organization that also brings it to its knees. So the very impact, even without the judicial sentence that might happen here, a conviction of a corporation for felonies in the state of New York carries with it some very, very significant commercial impacts that Donald Trump has got to be thinking about as well. And beyond that, you know, we're also concerned about those 3,500 employees around the world who are just doing their jobs, not at the top level, but those executives who may have benefited from this, we're less concerned about them. But the corporation itself is supported by them. And if it goes away, it's brought to its knees, it finishes, those people are out of work. And that's catastrophic. Again, underscoring the significance of what's happened today.
You know, it's hard to feel bad for anyone that would choose to work for the Trump org. You know, there are other employers, or so I hear. Trump's attorney, or the Trump org attorney, Fischetti, is calling this purely political. Here's a direct statement. In my 50 years of practice, I have never seen this office bring a case like this, and quite frankly, I am astonished. The district attorney is supposed to be apolitical, but everyone knows the only reason they're proceeding with this case is because it is Trump. Jim, I know they do a little posturing in the press. Is this the day for that sort of posturing? You know, when there are 10 criminal indictments against the organization, the CFO is doing a perp walk, and of course, the big boss is yet to be charged. Is that the day for posturing, Jim?
I would offer to you it's not. Unfortunately, we see that a lot, regrettably, in America of 21st century, even the 20th century. Note also that in those comments by defense counsel, there wasn't a full-throated denial, right? This was, well, the charges are insignificant. This is political. That's what's motivating this. How much more effective would it have been for him to come out and say, you know what, the DA is wrong, this didn't happen? We will show that those ledgers that are described in the indictment so compellingly are in fact not real, that they're not truthful, that somehow you've misunderstood them. That's not what he said. And again, I note that with some significance. Again, and I will also say that to the extent that he was saying, you know, in his experience, well, we all have experiences. None of those is dispositive in the court of law. In the federal system, are corporations indicted all the time? Yes, during my tenure as an assistant U.S. attorney, we indicted corporations along with individuals. This is not an atypical thing to happen. And the fact that it happens to have the name of Donald Trump, our former president, on it, is that significant? Sure, and that's why we're talking about it. But that doesn't mean that the prosecution itself is illegitimate, especially with the specificity that's set forth in this indictment, the breadth of it, the strength of it. I think the compelling nature of the evidence is going to show that this corporation did in fact engage in this kind of nefarious conduct.
Jim, at least as television and the movies portray it, you know, a criminal enterprise always goes down after they find the real ledgers. Then, you know, that seems to be all the evidence they need. So let me ask you, you got the real ledgers, and presumably the big boss of the Trump organization, and maybe even the princes and princess of the Trump org, are probably well aware if this alleged criminal enterprise is going on. One must assume 48 years into his employment, the boss is aware that Weisselberg's cooking the books because he probably instructed him to do so. Would the instruction of the CFO or anyone else to pay themselves in this unfair sort of fashion, unfair legally, criminally unfair sort of fashion, would that imply criminality on the person making the directive? I mean, I thought Trump was guilty of paying off a porn star, but only the guy that actually handed over the check has gone to prison. If Trump directed Weisselberg, does that create criminality for Trump?
Absolutely, it could. Again, with that kind of linchpin testimony, and again, your invocation of Michael Cohen with the hush money is perfect, right? Because Michael Cohen, we have the checks. We have the checks again signed by Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. Michael Cohen provides the glue, and he says, I was instructed to execute these checks, to deliver them. And again, it is a curiosity to this day about why it is either the federal government, state government has not prosecuted that particular aspect of all of this. Hopefully that will come down the road. To answer your question in this context, yes, if you are the one who is directing another individual to engage in criminal conduct, that is what is described in the indictment. That's a conspiracy. That is being substantively, you are much exposed, if not more. If you're the source of the conduct, you have got the same kind of exposure. Note again, this is a criminal conspiracy. Note again that it speaks about other individuals, as we've already spoken about, and there is more to come here. So Donald Trump's got to be looking at all this. He's also got to know that those subpoenas that were the subject of so much focus, they produced tax returns beyond just the ledgers. And those are sitting there, and other documents, other internal documents, all of that is sitting in Cy Vance's office, presumably waiting for some future charges of other individuals down the road.
You know, Jim, my only regret is with the pending disbarment of Rudy Giuliani, we won't get to see Rudy out there making, you know, public disclaimers on behalf of the former boss. I'll let Dom take one more.
If I can jump in here, Jim. Now, again, this isn't just Vance, right? This was the super grand jury meeting, 3 days a week for like 6 months. I'm not clear. How many people are in the grand jury? Do we know this, Jim? And is it a super majority? Is it unanimous? What is the number for the grand jury to come down to agree to these indictments?
Sure. You just need a majority of the grand jury. And again, I will go back and check on this in the federal system. It's 26 people. You just need a simple majority to do that. I'm sure it's the same in New York. The numbers may be a little bit different. A special grand jury, as you said, convened and meeting regularly, continuing to meet. They've not been disbanded. This is not a situation where their work is now done and they've gone off. They will continue to meet for the rest of this calendar year. Again, the reason why this comes out today, why? Because this particular part of the investigation, from my perspective, is complete. And at that time, a prosecution should go forward. Plainly has the additional impact of having this additional pressure on Weisselberg to get him to cooperate in those future cases. But the grand jury continues its work. And again, as I said before, not only has the opportunity to hear from witnesses, but it's also presented with all the documents much beyond what we've seen in this indictment.
Jim, quickly, did a statute of limitations come into this decision today, do you think?
You know, it plainly, the answer is, in a conspiracy, you can reach back. The significant thing there is it says this conspiracy lasted until yesterday, right? June 30th. So you can go back and go 15 years forward. Your substantive counts have got to be within the statute. But the answer to that question is not in the way this particular case has been charged, and probably not as future cases will be charged. Lots of conspiratorial conduct, lots of aiding and abetting going on here, too. So we'll see a lot of that down the road.
Yes or no, will Trump be indicted by this grand jury?
I can't imagine that with the kinds of things we're seeing that will not happen at some point. And again, I go back to that election situation.
I'm putting you down for a yes. We're out of time. Come back, more Devils. Thank you, James Santel.
Decide.
Always good to be with you.
Thanks, Jim.
Don't forget the sun.
I can handle things. I'm smart.
Lock him up. Lock up the sun. Don't forget about the sun. The kid gives me the creeps.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,